Manifested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Time we in conversation with Professor Hanely Meyer, head of the South African Vaccination and Immunization Center. What we're speaking about is South Africa's hesitancy rates are amongst the highest in sub-Saharan Africa. Why is vaccine hesitancy so high, and why is it a growing public health challenge in this country, particularly with a new vaccine confidence report revealing that 71% of participants expressed hesitation towards receiving at least one of the available vaccines. So we're joined now, again, as I said, by Professor Hanely Meyer. Very good evening to you, Prof. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Good evening, and thank you for having me here.
You know, the interesting thing is we grew up knowing that inoculation was important to save the lives of newborns and children, to inoculate them against diseases, some which are curable, but also to prevent any vulnerability. So is it that post-COVID we are thinking of vaccine in a different way, and also because of the advent of social media and the reports and opinions that flood our reading?
Yes, yes, definitely. Unfortunately, and as you mentioned, you know, from this report research we've done, you know, we found that 71% of people would be hesitant towards at least one of the vaccines that's available. So just to explain that, you know, vaccine hesitancy doesn't always mean refusal of all vaccines. It can also mean delays in accepting a vaccine or uncertainty around it, as you mentioned. And interestingly, also, it differs across vaccines. So someone might be willing for their child to receive only certain vaccines, but not others. But indeed, you know, it's really a concern, because this delay and refusal puts everybody at risk, individuals and communities, especially when it comes to highly transmissible respiratory infections such as measles, or sexually transmitted infections like HPV. And yes, social media definitely has a lot to do with all this misinformation circling around.
And Prof, I want us to have a very frank conversation about what the landscape was. What were the conditions, particularly around the apartheid era of vaccination? And there's a reason I ask this. I found myself with, you know, being affected by mumps, which is something that I believed that I would have been naturally inoculated against or being vulnerable to it. So was there equity in ensuring that every citizen of South Africa received vaccination, which all populations should receive against illnesses?
You know what, we in South Africa, we have the expanded program on immunization, which is really a very strong, excellent program. So within that program, the childhood vaccines are, you know, provided free of charge at all public sector healthcare facilities. So there's a schedule from birth until, you know, all the important vaccines for children. There's a whole schedule. Then there are also booster doses when they go to school at around 5-6 years old, again at 12 years. And then they also provide the HPV vaccine to girls at the age of 9 years. So all these vaccines are provided free of charge. So yes, and the vaccines on the schedule are those, you know, protecting children and people around them against the most serious diseases, you know, and the most contagious infections. So I would say, yes, we do have, there are challenges, obviously, there are challenges, but, you know, these vaccines are provided free of charge at public sector facilities. But yes, we can talk about the challenges.
I want to talk about the challenges because there was a time, when we talk about the agency that we're seeing now, where people are able to make informed, or in some cases, misinformed decisions about whether or not they do want to take up certain vaccines. you know, I just want to understand where we're moving from. Are we moving from where vaccination was forced and there is more autonomy now? Or are we saying that the conditions are still the same, pre and post apartheid?
Yes, you know, the EPI program started, I think, way back in 19, I speak under correction now, around the 70s or, you know, early, yeah, I think it was around the 70s, soon after the WHO, you know, started the program. So it's always been like that. But the problem now is, I mean, soon after COVID in 2023, the UNICEF published a report, for example, which showed that only 62% of parents or caregivers in South Africa regard vaccination as important for their children. So it shows you that, you know, the people's confidence in these immunizations has just decreased. And as you see, as you mentioned, you know, there's such a lot of information circling on social media and other online platforms, and unfortunately much of this what is available is often misleading or false, and you know, many people make use of social media for their information to be able to, so to speak, inform decisions, and what people see and what they hear is what influence them. And unfortunately now, you know, all this misinformation spreads much faster than evidence-based guidance and information. So this results in negative perceptions, it undermines public's trust in the vaccines, people fear some of the side effects and they become anxious, and then they start refusing vaccination. So, you know, those things we found plays, you know, a very important role, especially now after COVID-19.
Mm. And I want to also talk about the broader context of how South Africa's vaccine hesitancy rate compares to other countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Because you speak about the fact, as I mentioned, there's having either not enough information or too much information, whether it's the right or wrong one. But COVID people had the experience themselves. People had those very adverse, you know, adverse reactions to vaccination. So people are making what they believe are informed decisions. And I know this because we've read it, we've seen it, we've spoken to people, etc. So how does South Africa compare with the rest of sub-Saharan Africa? And the reasons, are they the same?
Yeah, you know, the reasons often are very context specific. So the reasons for people being hesitant might not be the same across all countries. So and there's also variation between the countries. So in some countries there's a lot of hesitation, in other countries they have very good vaccine uptake rates. So it all depends on, you know, the context within which this is happening. And, you know, so you spoke about these side effects that people experience. So, you know, that's also something that needs to be put into context. So it's quite difficult for people to understand or to weigh the benefits against the possible risk, the benefits of vaccination against the possible risks. And they are being influenced by what they hear and what they see and going on around them. So in general, I mean, all vaccines are very safe in a sense that we've got a very strong regulatory authority in South Africa. So the vaccines will only go onto the market when they are found to be safe and effective. But that, so the side effects that we expect to see are very mild ones. They're temporary. Usually they would go away without any treatment. But yes, there are some, you know, serious side effects, but they are very, very, very rare. So in other words, a vaccine will never go onto the market when, you know, these serious side effects will be very common.
So, Prof, allow me to just jump in there and talk about the COVID vaccine. I mean, the alacrity with which it had to be developed and admittedly, and I'm talking internationally, of the lack of information at some point when some of those vaccines had to be launched. That, isn't that something that we need to have a frank conversation also about? The fact that people realize that in some cases, research and development and the certainty of some information.
Yeah, you know what? So exactly like you, what you are saying, there were definitely gaps in the information and understanding. And yes, we can definitely improve our communication so that people are better informed. But I mean, it was a pandemic, so everything happened, you know, at a pandemic speed. And at that point in time, all the decisions were made based on the information available and, you know, working towards what would be the best. But for example, as you say, these things were developed at a very, you know, fast speed compared to what normally happens. But that's also something that people need to understand, because the research into the platforms with which these vaccines were delivered, the research for that has been, you know, going on for many, many years. So there was already a lot of research available when they started developing the vaccine. So it wasn't like that was developed overnight. And then the other thing is that some of these processes took place more kind of in parallel. And, you know, a lot of funding were invested in the development because it was a pandemic. So manufacturing started scaling up at a very early stage compared to what would normally happen. So all those factors help for, you know, the world to be able to have these vaccines available at such a what we call a pandemic speed. Prof, and that's also something that they are working towards in terms of preparing in case there is another pandemic.
And Prof, I do hope that we get to speak to you again, because it also is important to locate how the vaccine hesitancy is relegated to certain illnesses. Polio, unfortunately, there are still people who are not being vaccinated against it.
Which is a problem.
And if we talk about cervical cancer, because of cultural and religious beliefs, people are not taking up vaccines for young girls in particular at as early as the age of 9. Prof, thank you so much for your time. Yes, you wanted to say.
Thank you. Yes, I would love to speak to you about cervical cancer specifically, so please feel free.
Thank you very much. Professor Hanelie Meyer, head of the South African Vaccination and Immunization Center.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.